Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Sometimes.
Here's John Williams.
I think about things that I'm glad are in the world, even if I won't see them, use them, watch them, do them.
Lord have mercy.
I have one of those today. Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're on the air from 1 to 3 weekdays, Saturdays 10 to noon. This Saturday, we will be at Sox Fest. Remember, on social media, look for this show, WGN King John. That's me, WGN King John, on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We're busy out there. We invite you to be part of us on social media, too. And don't miss the Mincing Rascals. We just recorded the latest episode today, about 2 hours ago. It'll go up around 5 o'clock this afternoon. The Mincing Rascals was judged by the people that judge podcasts in Chicago, the journalists, as the best podcast in the city. And boy, was the gang at it today. There was so much to talk about between Covington Catholic, which is actually the last of the things we talked about, to the government shutdown, Nancy Pelosi, Donald Trump, et cetera, et cetera. And frankly, I think the stuff that the Rascals minced best about today had to do with Ed Burke, the all-powerful alderman, and Danny Solis, the alderman who was pretty powerful in his own right, is retiring, but for the last 2 years has been secretly recording the conversations he had with Ed Burke. He was the mole. 2 years he's been wearing a wire, to say nothing of the recorded phone conversations. You'll hear all of that at the Mincing Rascals. Wherever you listen to finer podcasts, look for them. We also post it on my Facebook page, WGN King John, and it's on our website. We'll talk to a person who's real smart about nutrition. And here we are now getting towards the end of January. How are you eating and drinking? We'll visit with the registered dietitian at Seattle Sutton on healthy eating in the new year. Before we get to that, though, two candy points. Sweethearts. Those wonderful chalky candies that you see in the shapes of hearts with "love you" written on them have gone out of business. They're going to reopen for 2020, but there will be a shortage of the sweetheart candies this year. I did not realize how popular and unpopular, how polarizing those candies can be. That's the world we live in. I love those candies. I love the messages. I have a sweet spot in my heart for them. And they say that the company couldn't make it anymore, even though it was a billion-dollar enterprise. So Krispy Kreme said, all right, here's what we're going to do. This year, and maybe they had this in the works all along. I can't imagine they'd be this nimble. But Krispy Kreme is selling in February those donuts in their boxes in the shape of a heart. The donuts are in the shape of a heart, and they have the same pastel-colored icing on top of them, with the sorts of messages you would see on the candy hearts. You know, BFF, crazy for you, say yes, pick me, stuff like that. Love, I heart you. None of them racy or inappropriate. Boy, would they get in trouble if they did. You can't do that anymore. So Krispy Kreme has jumped in on that, and more power to them. So the Speaker of the House and the President have, I don't know if they've come to terms, but Donald Trump is, I'm going to say, capitulated, and I don't think it's a bad thing. You know, it's very interesting to see the language that people are using on this. CNN says Donald Trump caved, and you can call it whatever you want, but Trump said, I'll wait until the government reopens, if it ever does, before I give my State of the Union address. I think Trump looks good today, though my Mincing Rascals pal a short while ago all were patting Nancy Pelosi on the back with a lot of attagirls, and I think Trump looks like the adult in the room, and I think he's doing the right thing here. Either way, he's going to delay his State of the Union address, and so we'll all continue to slog on. So here is Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, and he was speaking on CNBC, and they were talking to him about trade. This, you know, really, this isn't Wilbur Ross's place. He's not very nimble and agile. His mind seems to be fine, but he's sitting there. He's an old man, and he doesn't seem to be that interested in retail political talk. But that's what the CNBC journalists turned to him to when they were asking him about how this government shutdown affects people.
Put it in perspective, you're talking about 800,000 workers, and while I feel sorry for the individuals that have hardship cases, 800,000 workers, if they never got their pay, which is not the case, they will eventually get it, but if they never got it, you're talking about 0.3% on our GDP. So it's not like it's a gigantic number overall.
Mr. Secretary, there are reports that there are some federal workers who are going to homeless shelters to get food.
Well, I know they are, and I don't really quite understand why, because as I mentioned before, the obligations that they would undertake, say a borrowing from a bank or a credit union, are in effect federally guaranteed. So the 30 days of pay that some people will be out, there's no real reason why they shouldn't be able to get a loan against it.
I don't know how that works. So you go to the bank and you say, I'm short, but my paycheck is guaranteed. So will you spot me a couple thousand dollars to get through the next month? And then when I get the money, I'll pay it back. That's what he's saying. And maybe that's happening. I don't know. But that's what he's saying you need to do when you go to your bank. Just coming out of his lips, it doesn't sound very empathetic, the host said in the understatement of the day. and by the way, if it's any consolation to those of you who don't get a paycheck, a member of my family is now going to be missing a third paycheck if he doesn't get it pretty soon. But he's missed two now. If it's any consolation to you, you represent a very small percentage of the overall U.S. economy. So we got that going for us. But again, that's coming from a commerce secretary, right? He's not a spokesperson for the president. He is de facto here, but he's the commerce secretary. He's talking about commerce. He's not talking about you when he says that stuff. So Laura Bush was on Bold TV. I keep saying Laura Bush, don't I? Because there was a Laura Bush. There still is a Laura Bush. Laura Trump, the president's daughter-in-law, and as they're quick to remind us, a presidential campaign advisor. She speaks for the administration. She was on something called Bold TV. So there they are talking a little bit about the current politics. And this is the president's daughter-in-law talking about what some of you are going through.
In terms of the workers who are coming to work and not getting paid, what would you say to them?
Listen, it's not fair to you, and we all get that, but this is so much bigger than any one person. It is a little bit of pain.
It is a little bit of pain. And then the likes of Anderson Cooper cut it right there, right? I mean, they say, and then they pause. You can just see Rachel Maddow pausing and looking and going, a little bit of pain from the mouths of millionaires, and you just need to take it for the team. I thought that edit was suspicious. I thought that edit looked like she may have qualified that statement a little more, and maybe it didn't help much, but the edit sure made it look worse, and they do that all the time. So let's just play it a little further. Maybe this will help, maybe that won't. I think what you heard was about 10 seconds. Let's listen to about 30 seconds.
In terms of the workers who are coming to work and not getting paid, what would you say to them?
Listen, it's not fair to you, and we all get that, but this is so much bigger than any one person. It is a little bit of pain, but it's going to be for the future of our country, and their children and their grandchildren and generations after them will thank them for their sacrifice right now. I know it's hard. I know people have families, they have bills to pay, they have mortgages, they have rents that are due. But the president is trying every single day to come up with a good solution here. If we do nothing right now, it's never going to get fixed. This is our one opportunity. So I would just tell them, please stay strong. We appreciate everything that you're sacrificing.
So the whole thing has more of a, we know it's unfair to you, but this is an opportunity that we won't get again. Thank you for taking one for the team. We're there for you. Hang in there, hang in there. I don't know that that helps, but it's a little fuller. The problem with that, of course, is that I know some people who aren't getting a paycheck and they're not on that team. They don't want to take one for the president, right? They don't even support the concept, let alone the unfairness of it all. There's that, but then what if at least you felt, well, but it'll pay a dividend that I'm willing to make a sacrifice for. There's farmers in Iowa who generally feel that way. But I know other federal workers who absolutely don't. So I think that sort of, you know, falls on deaf ears, depending on who's hearing it. But at least that's where that conversation is today. You know what also just struck me as fascinating? Speaking of people who maybe have more money than you and me, did you get the details on Ken Griffin's house? Did you guys report that on your show today?
Which house? The one in New York?
How about that? Yeah, I mean, Miami. I guess he has houses all around the world.
We've talked about the one in Chicago, the condo that he bought.
Yeah, well, that's what the, you know, the story. He has the richest house in Chicago, right? Ken Griffin has two stories of, you know, two full floors of a condo building on Walton Street downtown, not too far from Water Tower Place, that area, right? On the Gold Coast. Is that the Gold Coast? That's the Gold Coast. Or is that the Mag Mile? That's the Mag Mile.
It's inland from the Mag Mile.
Oh, it is. Okay.
I think so, yeah.
Well,
what's the address?
It's on Walton.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't know this area that well, but I do have his address here. Here's the way the Tribune is reporting it. Billionaire Ken Griffin. And he's the guy that got you. How did he get so rich? His company is Citadel, the investment firm. So he's like so rich, you can't even understand it. I mean, because the house he bought in New York, the penthouse apartment that he bought in New York, $238 million. A quarter of a billion dollars for one of his houses. Think about that. The deal sets a record for the most expensive home ever sold in the United States, says the Tribune. I'll get to the New York Times reporting on this in a second. Griffin paid $58.75 million in November of last year, just a couple months ago, for the top four floors in the recently completed Near North Condominium 9 West Walton Street, known as Number 9 Walton. Someday I want to live in a place that has a name, you know, the Dakota, not Number 9 Walton. You know, instead of see the one and then you go down two and then see the tree with the dumpster, it's the one by that. That's where I live. You see the dog poop and the rocks? You go one house over and then cross the street. That's where I live. Public records show that Griffin paid $21 million for that building's penthouse. He bought the 38th floor. And then this is the Chicago one. Then he spent $13 million on the 37th floor, the entire floor below that. And then he spent $12 million on the floor below that.
And this new construction, I think, too.
And then building. He spent $71 million, and then he spent $12 million on the floor below that. So he owes, like, floor is him.
There are a lot of big names who've moved into that building since then.
We're talking about the Chicago one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who else lives in there?
I don't remember. But
Dennis... Boy, if one of them is Ro Khan, I quit.
Dennis Rodkin follows that building a lot when he comes on with me because it's really become sort of the premier address in the city right now.
Nine Walton. Number 9 Walton. Where do you live? Well, I live at number 9 Walton. Well, you guess what? I live at number 10 Walton. So it says here the high rise is between 7th Avenue and Broadway. Yeah, so that would be inland. Inland. Doesn't even have a lake view. I'm going to get a place at 13 Walton. Four more than nine. The
Jonathan Taves, Jason Hayward.
Seriously.
Michael Tatum, who I think was in trucking, Marina Cartage.
Wow.
Yeah, 19 others have purchased in.
Taves,
all
though.
Paid,
I mean,
$4 million or more.
That's funny because, you know, Taves is a super successful athlete, but hockey players don't get paid what, say, NFL players get paid. And he's young. He hasn't had a chance for the interest to grow on that at a whopping 0.1% a year.
Well, he's doing okay, apparently.
I guess. And, you know, the thing is, what are you going to do with that money, kid? If you want to invest it, real estate can be a good investment. The problem to me, though, and I don't know why he didn't call for Ken Griffin, is if you spend $238 million on a house, right? What did you talk him down from? $239? You spent $238 million. Someday, you're going to want to get out of that dump. And you're going to have to find somebody else who's going to come in and go, 238? Oh, that's a steal. I'm in. How many humans on the planet have money to take your 238 mil? This is the thing that would trouble me.
Well, that's just one of the billions of differences between you and Ken Griffin.
I don't know why he didn't call. So here's the NY Times version of this story. A hedge fund billionaire, and by the way, I'll just finish the sentence. A hedge fund billionaire has purchased a Central Park penthouse for $238 million, the most anyone has ever paid for a home in the United States. There's something fundamentally wrong with the system that allows somebody to have $238 million.
He's a fascinating guy. He's a very conservative
guy.
I'm happy for him. And he's a great philanthropist as well.
But I will, for that kind of money, you better be. I'm sorry, Steve. He didn't do anything wrong except maybe play the game better than the rest of us. Maybe he did do something wrong, but let's say he didn't do anything wrong. He's just...
No, I think he started his Citadel. I think he started while he was in college.
My point is that a system that allows beer pong. Somebody... You did not play beer pong with him.
No, while I was in college, he was creating the Citadel, and I was playing drinking games. I think that's another one of the billions of differences.
Okay, fine. This is the socialist in me, and it goes away.
No, I tend to agree with you for the most part, but...
Talk about income distribution. So he purchased the Central Park penthouse for $238 million. The unit, a nearly 24,000-square-foot combination of two apartments, is in Central Park South. This is under construction, too. So he's kind of telling them how to build the floors according to the stuff he wants. You know, how do you want it in there? You know, for instance, if I had four floors of a New York penthouse of a building and I had floors of it, I guarantee you I would have a fire pole from the top floor to the fourth floor down, right? How much fun would that be? Like, we could take the elevator, we could take an escalator, we could do the stairs, maybe we'll have all of those, but I guarantee you I'm having a fireman's pole just to slide down. Hey, kids, get down for dinner. We're billionaires. Down they go. And then you'd have some pillows or something there, or butlers to catch you. The previous record, he's at 238. The previous record is $137 million for an East Hampton home that sold in 2014. Mr. Griffin, founder of the investment firm Citadel, has spent hundreds of millions on apartments in New York, Chicago, Miami, London. He holds the record for the most expensive apartment in Miami. He spent $60 million for that. Last year, he spent $59 million for the Chicago penthouse, etc. In one of his places, he'll be sharing a building with a Sting and his wife, Trudy. So, you know, maybe this is just me being petty. But when I see numbers that large sometimes, I just think, wait a minute. Patrick, you're on WGN Radio. What can you do for us? You're on the air.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I am a business fan, and I understand profit, and I understand wealth, and I understand all of the aspects of free market economy. And all of these guys that have these billions of dollars, and it's their prerogative to do what they want to do with their money, but, you know, if I had that kind of money, not only would I do what they're doing, probably, maybe not that extravagant, but why don't we never hear about any of them giving $1 billion away to 10 special charities that need this for research, medical research facilities? I mean, you know, the publicity that they could garner with that is unpurchasable for the good publicity, as opposed to people that sit there and go, now that's disgusting, okay? They said that, you know, I mean, why don't we ever hear about those type of spending deals or whatever it is?
No. He does give away, I don't know what the number is, I can try to find it, but one of the things he's doing is, I think he's the guy building soccer fields around the city in places where there is no soccer.
You know, the problem
he does
for
a
guys,
lot with education. You know.
The problem for guys like him is, if he's... And it would satisfy people like me in a way, because I'd be happy to hear about that. It would make me less critical of their excess if I heard about their largesse. But the problem is, if they do that, then it looks like grandstanding, right? So then these poor people, imagine that. These poor people, they can't win, right? If they give quietly, they get no credit for it. If they give a little more loudly, they're criticized for it. I understand the conundrum that presents for them. I'm almost mad at the whole system, though, Patrick. Maybe you're not, but nobody should have $1 billion.
I'm not sure I agree with that. However,
I'm not either.
I mean, you know, go back a few years, John, and Steve, and remember when the oil company CEOs were flown into, or they flew their jets into Washington,
yep.
D.C., and they
yep.
were asked about all their profits?
Yep.
And they were making, you know, $4, $8, and $9 billion a quarter. Okay, and there was a lot of public outcry because of the cost of gas and petroleum and everything else. Why wouldn't those guys, who are a lot smarter than me, be smart enough to look at their board of directors and their stockholders and say, listen, we're going to give $1 billion away to charity,
yeah.
and we're going to put it on 10 different charities. And nobody would have questioned what they did, and they would have said, yeah, you made good profits for your stockholders and your board of directors and everything else, but look at how much good you did for the cancer research and for other things. But they didn't do that.
They could build a wall.
They arrogantly sat there and said, we don't have to apologize for our profits. Well, nobody's asking you to apologize for it. But we're asking you to do something better with it.
Oh, yeah, or be smarter about it. I got to go. Elif is waving at me. Patrick, thank you for the phone call.
Take care.
Yep, yeah, I'm glad you joined us. But you're right. And if nothing else, you know, be clever about it. If you gave $1 billion, made a big hoo-ha about it, maybe when you needed some regulatory help or some political or popular support, you'd get it. Steve, there I was speaking snarkily, would you say, about Ken Griffin and the fact that he has zillions of dollars? I said nobody should have $1 billion because, you know, I don't have $1 billion.
Yeah, yet.
A lot of you have. Oh, Steve.
No, I mean, one of your kids could hit it rich.
I was just going to say, the only people who really get rich are the people who make the money for themselves. I have been a lifelong employee and always will. The only way to get rich, this is my theory on this, is it has to be your company and then you pay yourself. When you're paying yourself, then you can get rich. But if somebody else is paying you, why would you pay somebody and make them rich when you can make yourself richer? I mean, you know, more or less. My understanding is rich people pay themselves. Anyway, the following. Text from a lot of you who said, well, John, Griffin gave $10 million to the Chicago Police Department for the crime labs in 2017. He paid for the bike path by the lake, said somebody else, and I love that bike path. And by the way, the improvements that either he or the Park District are making to the bike path along the lake are world class. Beautiful lights are going up and the pavement is getting wider and new. I very much appreciate that. 312 says he's created wealth for thousands of others, not just himself. 773, John, why should no one have $1 billion? If nothing else, think of all of the people they employ. And on they go. So thank you for your texts and reminders to me about all of that. Let's move on. Renee Fisak is in our studio. You've heard of Seattle Sutton Healthy Eating. She is in our studio right now, and that is her company. She's worked there for years as a registered dietitian. She now owns the dang thing. Renee, welcome to the show. How are you?
Great to be here.
You got $1 billion?
I don't, no. And that's not our goal. Our goal is to get people healthier. So,
you know, maybe that's true, too. This is a tangent, isn't it? But maybe the people who are truly successful aren't passionate about $1 billion. They're passionate about investments or healthy eating or cars or whatever it is that, you know, then you do so well because you care so much about that you are rewarded. You've been with Seattle Sutton, I said, for 6 years?
About 6 years.
And what were you doing for them all those years?
So I started as a consultant, basically improving their nutrition guidelines, making sure that the meals were adjusted so that we fit levels of sodium, cholesterol, saturated fat, fat. So I just started doing that on the side. And then, you know, we definitely thought there was a full-time position for me, and we've really improved the meals since then and made them healthier, of course, while making them better, which is key. And Seattle and I have always seen eye to eye on any health-related issues. And, you know, our goal has always been to improve the health of people with a no-gimmick approach.
Yeah.
And she called me probably in May or so, and she said, do you want to buy the company? And I said, I do. I think I do.
Huh. But you've been blogging for them all along. And that's actually why I invited you here, because I think a lot of us have decided, you know, after the turn of the year, I'm going to eat healthier and drink healthier. I've never seen hashtag dry January trend so much as it is now. But I also think we're at a point right now where people are starting to wobble a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm reading some of your blogs, Five Substitutes for the Salt Lover,
mm-hmm.
why your health ailment may be from the food you're consuming, food labels, what to look for and what to avoid. So these are in my wheelhouse too. Let's start with salt substitutes. What are you saying about that?
Well, most Americans eat way too much sodium. So the average intake of sodium is about 3,400 calories. And the American Heart Association says, you know, we should be somewhere between 1,500 and 2,300 milligrams of sodium
per day.
You
said calories at first, but you meant milligrams.
Milligrams of sodium, yes.
Yeah. So we're doing 3,400 and we should do how many?
About 1,500 to 2,300, depending on what your goals are. If you're just, you know, a normal, healthy adult without any issues, then somewhere more towards 2,300. If you have somebody that has, you know, hypertension or having some issues with blood pressure, obviously, then you need to be lower than that.
I have no idea what my sodium intake is in terms of grams, you know?
Most people don't. That's why we do all the planning, shopping, and cooking for you, so that you don't have to think about those things. But most people get their sodium intake from processed products. So it's not just from the salt shaker. About 10 to 20% of the sodium that we eat is from the salt shaker, but the rest of it is from processed foods. And then there's a small portion that's in natural foods.
Processed food meaning a McDonald's hamburger or
Absolutely.
A can of soup or something mm-hmm. like that?
Yep. TV and dinners, box dinners, crackers.
What are some things that would surprise me for the sodium content, would you say?
I would say that when you go out to dinner, you have really no idea how much sodium you're putting in your mouth. So when a lot of the restaurants had to come out with their nutrition labels, you know, chain restaurants, or put their nutrition facts on dinners, you know, there's wraps or salmon dinners that have somewhere close to 5,000 to 6,000 milligrams of sodium in it in just one dish.
Really?
Yes. So it's when those came out several years ago, I think the public was a little shocked on that. It's really easy to do though, especially with flavor enhancers like MSG. You know, that flavor enhancer makes you want to keep eating and eating and eating, and you really can overdo it on the sodium.
I'll get to the substitutes here with you in a second, but I mean, 5,000 or 6,000 in some single dishes people would consume.
Yes.
You said 3,400 would be high, and that's what it is for the average person.
Yes.
We should be aiming for something half that, 1,500 to 2,000.
Per day.
So let's say 1,750 milligrams of sodium per day just to split the difference.
Sure.
And I may be eating in a single serving something that is double that as it is.
Or triple. Mm-hmm.
You know where I notice it is if I get a steak at a restaurant.
Yes.
You know, and you love that, but holy cow, do you feel that?
Yes, and that's, you know, obviously salt is good, and beef is one of those items that is much better with salt. So you do have to be careful on that, and that's why portion control is so important. So, you know, if you're eating a 20-ounce porterhouse compared to an 8-ounce filet, you know, you're obviously can control the amount of sodium that you eat by controlling your portions.
I guess so. Or just, you know, or just don't order steak out, which is kind of what I do anymore mm-hmm. because I just, I don't want to eat less. I want to eat more, but I can't order steak because it, I notice it anymore.
You can't blow that sodium level out of the water. Absolutely.
What are some substitutes?
So, you know, when you're looking about not necessarily replacements, but low sodium tips. You know, it's important to eat more fruits and vegetables to balance the potassium and the sodium. So fruits and vegetables can naturally contain potassium. But as far as, you know, what should I use instead of salt? You know, spices. Obviously, fresh herbs have a lot of flavor in them and pack a punch of flavor. So you want to do that as much as possible. But, you know, dried herbs and spices are very good too. Mrs. Dash obviously has a great line of dried herbs and spices that you can explore and play around with. But you have to, you know, make sure that what you're using, with the kind of herbs and spices that you're using is good for your meal too. So,
right. What's the orange-colored seasoned salt, the Lowry seasoned salt?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's got a lot of sodium in it, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm not cutting any corners there, am I?
No, you're not.
You know what I like is pepper. I put a lot of pepper on stuff.
Pepper is...
Is there ever a problem with that?
No, pepper is absolutely fine. There's no issues with pepper, no nutritional issues with pepper. But, you know, I should say, too, that when people are accustomed to a high level of salt, that, you do become accustomed to it. So you need that level of salt going forward to actually have food taste good. So you have to cut yourself off at the beginning and say, you know what, I have to go through a period of not salting food, not overly salting food, and your taste will adjust to that.
Oh, really? You can sort of turn your palate down a little bit.
Yes.
Reset it to be sensitive to a lower amount of sodium.
Yeah, when I would counsel patients before I was this, you know, was at this job with Seattle Suttons, and I had a customer or a patient one time tell me that, you know, he would always go through the drive-thru at McDonald's. He was eating cheeseburgers and double cheeseburgers all the time, and he didn't think anything of it. And then he had a heart issue. He had a heart attack. And so, you know, the light bulb went on. He needs to change his eating habits. So he switched to a low-sodium diet, and he said, you know, one day I had a craving for a cheeseburger, and I went back and I tried to eat one, and he couldn't. He just, there was so much salt and sodium in that meal, and he didn't realize it before. So his taste did adjust to that.
That's really, I think, helpful, because I think when some of us try to do what you're suggesting, the food is so missing the salt. But if we'd be patient, mm-hmm. we could train ourselves to appreciate it at that lower level.
It takes a few weeks. It does.
Yeah. When I'm reading labels, what should I be looking for?
It depends what your goal is. So is your goal weight loss? Then obviously calories should be the number one thing that you focus on. If you do have hypertension or heart failure, then sodium is something that you need to pay attention to. So I always ask people first, you know, what's your goal? What are you trying to achieve? I mean, overall, yes, we want to make sure that we're eating within the right calorie levels, that we have, you know, a certain percentage of fat and saturated fat in our diet, cholesterol and sodium as well.
Yeah, right. Keep going. But I mean, I think that a lot of people are interested in calories. So just talk to me a little bit about that. How many calories should I consume in a day?
Well, of course, that's different for each person. But for it's even hard to say, generally speaking. It really depends on your age, your activity level, whether you're male, female, how much muscle mass you have compared to fat mass. So, you know, if you're really starting to focus on that, I would tell people to start at a calorie level and then, you know, get on the scale every week or so and see, are you losing weight? Are you gaining weight? Are you losing weight at a healthy rate? And if you are, then that's what you should continue on if that is your goal. If you're gaining weight, obviously you're consuming too many calories. But one thing that I never really understood for weight loss a long time ago was when someone explained to me calories versus weight. So 1 pound of weight is about equal to 3,500 calories. So in order to lose a pound of weight, you actually have to cut 3,500 calories out of your diet. So how do you do that? Let's take 3,500 calories divided by 7 days of the week. So you need to cut 500 calories per day from your normal diet if you want to lose 1 pound of weight per week. So if you normally consume, let's say, 2,500 calories a day, if you cut down to 2,000, then you're looking at about 1 pound of weight loss per week.
Well, that sounds okay. You make it sound simple. It can't be that simple. Is it that simple?
You know, the nutritional science hasn't changed all that much in the last 100 years. It really comes down to calories in versus calories out. And, of course, activity levels, you know, help with that, too. So if you're burning an extra 200 calories through, exercise, then that helps, that extra 500 calories that you're trying to cut out.
I want to continue to eat as much as I do and then fight it on the other end with the exercise. Mm-hmm. Do you care as a dietitian if I do it that way?
So what's more effective for weight loss, diet or exercise? It's a great question. I get it all the time. And as a dietitian and someone who studies weight loss, my answer is absolutely diet. It is so much easier to control the calories in than it is to control the calories out. So for example, let's say the difference between a large French fry and a small French fry is about 350 calories, okay? So just cutting back on portion is going to cut you out 350 calories.
How hard would I go? Oh, keep going. Finish that thought.
So then, you know, how does that equate to exercise? Well, you'd have to run a 5K, basically,
That's
3.1 mile race.
Are you kidding me? I've got to run a 5K to burn off the 350 calories?
Yes. So what's easier? For me, I don't know. It's cutting back on portions.
Well, that's a game changer, what you just said.
Yeah.
Because I just think, well, I can just burn it off. I'll go down in the gym. I'll get on the treadmill for 20 minutes.
It doesn't really, I mean, sure, if you want to do that. But, I mean, for me, it's easier just to.
Well, and the treadmill has to be set at 17 because that's because the amount of, I don't run a 5K a day.
Right.
Right. Okay. You may have a question or comment, too. The number's 312-981-7200. Renee Fisak is here. She's the owner now of Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating. She's, as you can tell, a registered dietitian. Maybe you've been reading her blogs for a long time, her blog posts about healthy eating, salt substitutions. You also had a piece not that long ago. Well, that was actually last fall, about specific foods that we're eating that might be ailing us. But just talk briefly about that. And again, your questions, comments, calls, or texts, 312-981-7200 WGN. A lot of people are asking questions. We'll give our guests a chance to answer some of these. Is Himalayan pink salt really better for you? We have lots of salt questions. When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist. That's Tom Skilling, and that's weeknights on WGN-TV. Okay, Elif, I can keep going now, right? We don't have any more live reads. We can continue with our guests and calls, right? And your text as well. Well, let's just start with that one. In fact, I think that is what Jamie was asking about also. Jamie, are you there?
I am.
What's your question?
You know, I was on the internet, and I seen that a nutritionist, her name was Barbara O'Neill, mentioned that one of the best cures for any kind of ailment is water, because we're made of so much. And she mentioned to kickstart the water to take a couple of grains of Celtic salt. I don't know if I'm saying that right or not, but that was it. And she said also that consuming Himalayan pink salt, there's more that you can enjoy there with less regret, as far as
you know, less sodium or whatever in it. Is that true? What do you know about all of that?
So I get that question a lot, and you know, if I have a tablespoon of regular salt and a tablespoon of pink Himalayan salt or whatever kind of salt, you know, is trending at the moment, it has the same amount of sodium. So you're not really getting any, you're not cutting sodium that way. However, it does have some micronutrients in it, but really not enough to consider it a health food. But the other thing too is when they come in bigger granules, a lot of people need less salt to flavor the food in the same way, and it has a little bit more flavor to it. So some people are able to use less and get the same benefit, but it's so minuscule that I don't really consider it better or healthier.
Okay, we could start here. Thank you for the call. I'm glad you got in. It's not worse for you.
It's not worse for you.
It might be a teeny bit better for you, but not because you're consuming less sodium, but because of these micronutrients you spoke about.
Sure.
And coarse salt is better than fine salt generally, would you say?
You typically need less. So, yes.
Or you use less.
You use
maybe.
Less, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What about, let's see here, John, you're on WGN Radio. John, what was your question or comment? Hi.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. I enjoyed the conversation. I have a question. I'm attempting counting my macros on a daily basis. I'm 55 and looking to lose like 30 pounds. And the thing I'm trying desperately to do is be as accurate as possible. And my question is, am I focusing too much on the counting and not enough on the food? Because it seems every day I never hit my number, and I'm not hungry, so therefore I don't eat, and I'm not really losing significant amounts of weight.
What does macros mean? What are macros?
Macros means you count your carbohydrates, your fats, and your proteins, and there's a combination of those three numbers that would generate some sort of weight loss.
What do you hear?
I think that's a very good question. So, yeah, we want to be within a certain range of carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. But if you're not focusing on calories, then you're really not accomplishing anything. So, you know, obviously you can have the goal for carbohydrates, let's say, is somewhere between 45 and 65% of your calories. However, if you're eating 2,000 calories, then, you know, you're eating a certain percentage of that from carbohydrates. If you're eating 4,000 calories, you're still getting that same percentage. However, you're not going to be losing weight with 4,000 calories. You're going to be losing weight on 2,000 calories, most likely. So I would say you're probably focusing on the wrong thing. Try to focus on calories, get a calorie level in mind and try to achieve that. And then kind of look at your macronutrients after that and see if you're within your target.
Renee, I hear 2,000 a lot. You said it depends on who you are and what you are, but
yes.
That's that's not an unreasonable general number to start with, but fair enough. But I also heard you say, whatever your number is, start there and then subtract. Try and hit a number that's below that and monitor your weight loss.
You know, most people don't really track what they're eating. They have no idea how many calories they're eating, and we typically underestimate the calories they were eating. But if someone's really interested in doing this, I would say try to really count calories exactly what you're doing, and then kind of see where you're at. And if you've been able to maintain weight for a while, then try to make that your starting point and cut back from there.
All right. Well, this has been helpful, discouraging, and also encouraging. Renee Fisak is the owner of Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating, registered dietitian and blogger. Are you still posting on the company site?
So I've been a little bit busy for the last couple months.
I saw why a little while ago. That's a darling little human out there of yours.
Yeah, so she is almost 4 weeks old, and so we bought the business. I think I told you 7. It might be 8 or 9 now. But no, I've taken a little hiatus from writing new blogs, new content, but I'll get back to it very soon.
Well, I'll give you a free plug. This isn't a commercial, but if you want to jumpstart the process, Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating sounds like a good way to go.
We do all the planning, shopping, and cooking and counting for you.
It's nice to have you in our studio. Thanks for coming by. Let's talk nutrition again another day.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Did I?
Here's John Williams.
Did I hear correctly that they're not? We have to talk more about this marijuana story. We will in just a minute. Hi, it's John Williams. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, plus a postscript to the interview we just did with our friend from Seattle, Sutton. Thank you to Renee Fisak again, the registered dietitian from Seattle Sutton, who was in our studio. One of you texted and said, John, we never got to the 5 substitutes for salt lovers. I'm reading from her post about that, and this may satisfy you, this may not. Her 5 substitutes, if you will, were 1, eat more fruits and vegetables for a variety of reasons to combat the salt. 2, spice it up using spices, dried and fresh herbs, roots such as garlic and ginger, citrus, vinegars and wine, black pepper, cinnamon and turmeric, to fresh basil, chili peppers and lemon juice. Spice your food up that way. Okay. 3, this is interesting. She said, don't use bottled marinades. Substitute citrus juice or olive oil instead of reaching for pre-made marinades that pack a lot of salt. Let the meat soak in a mix of olive oil and citrus juice. 4, pass the broth. Instead of using beef, chicken, or vegetable broth, boil shiitakes, dried or fresh, in water for 30 minutes. The mushrooms lend an earthy flavor to any soup, stuffing, or gravy. They're packed with natural umami. They obviously have less sodium. And she said, use tomato puree. A great way to reduce sodium in chili and pasta sauces is to use tomato puree instead of tomato sauce. The puree is a bit thicker, and it's even a little cheaper. About your calories in and your calories out, 815 texted, I gained 30 pounds, Chicago's finest craft beer, in 1 year. We were talking about that off the air here. If you're trying to figure out where your calories are, and you like a dandy IPA from one of our swell breweries here in town, which I do, that's just calories galore in those things.
So I don't really eat McDonald's french fries, but she said if you eat a small fry instead of a large fry, you can save 300 calories?
350.
So if I just start eating the small fries, I'm going to lose weight?
That's what she said, Steve. Yep, you got it.
Can
and
we
get
just
some small Cinnabons, too. The calories will just, the pounds will just jump off.
So, go ahead, Latif.
Can we go back to the tomato puree idea?
Yeah.
When we were in Cancun, I tried this tomato puree with bread, which I know is against what she advises.
Advises the.
But you could do tomato puree and mix it with olive oil and garlic and spread it on something healthier than toast. Like, you could spread it on your vegetables, for example. It was amazing.
That was good?
So good. My cousin introduced me to it.
So, like, literally just get a can of it with the olive oil and lemon juice, mix it up, and spread that on whatever you want to eat, huh?
Yes.
Wow.
In a food processor.
Can I go back to the craft beer thing? This is so disheartening. Kevin, you can chime in at any time if you like, because I know you like a craft beer, too. At least I thought he did. It says, I gained 30 pounds just enjoying Chicago's finest craft beer in a year. Maybe there were other things, like maybe you were having hamburgers when you were doing that as well. That's from 815. John, the salt substitutes were never given. Well, we threw that in there, too. Steve, what is Kim Fox, the state's attorney,
a couple of things. She said today that she favors the legalization of marijuana. She said it shouldn't be rushed into it. And she said, I'll read the quote, "I also believe that we must do it while acknowledging the public health and public safety ramifications." So in other words, you know, let's not just make this legal right away. Know that there are going to be issues with it. But she favors legalization of marijuana.
But she can't legalize marijuana.
Well, she's the chief law enforcement official in Cook County, the state prosecutor. So having her on board is significant. No, she can't do it, but she can support it. I mean, it looks like it's going to, J.B. Pritzker certainly supports it. I mean, it looks like it's going to happen. So
legalize her, marijuana or change
legalize
it
marijuana. Now,
for recreational purposes in Illinois.
Yes. The other thing she said she wants to do, and she said she plans to expunge all misdemeanor marijuana convictions in attempt to help those who've been hurt by committing a crime that is not going to be a crime anymore, and a crime that can stay with people for a long time, keep them from, you know, renting apartments or getting a job or things like that. So she would move toward expunging all of those convictions from the records of people convicted in Cook County.
Well, I'd be
interested. That's a big step.
I think it is, and I'm kind of curious how much that will help or would have helped you. If you're a person who's had a marijuana conviction or...
Well, you're filling out a rental application, ever been convicted of a crime? Yeah, possession of pot. I mean, you know, if you've got four or five people trying to get that apartment...
You hate to lie about this sort of thing, especially to your employer, so that's a mark against you.
I would say it's it could be disqualifying in many cases, sure.
So, a little late to the game for those of you who didn't get the job or the apartment, but at least going forward, that will not be on your record? It'll be, I presume that's what expunged means?
Correct.
Wow.
And it's not a pardon, but it's swiped from your record. I'm not a legal expert either, but that's my understanding.
Okay, so tell me if that, where have you, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, or just walk down the hall. How, when, and where has a marijuana conviction hurt you? Really, where have you run into it? And would it have helped or will it help if there's not a record of that at Cook County? I'm kind of curious about that. I have nothing to say about this. It's just now, I have not run into it.
That's a professional hazard, I'll say.
What do you mean by that?
For a talk show host, you should have something to say about it.
Well, yes, I'm just speaking about my personal experience. Oh. The closer we come in Illinois to legalizing a bunch of the vices that I've said we should legalize all along, the more nervous I get about it.
Be careful what you wish for.
It's been very easy to say, oh, we shouldn't be putting people in jail. We really don't jail people for marijuana possession. But, you know, I understand that there's a disproportionate number of people or people of color or people who are poor who are in jail for the sorts of drug convictions that we could just decide aren't real crimes anymore.
And it is the thing, you know, the punishment, if it stays on your record, continues to haunt you for the rest of your life if you're filling out those applications. Have you ever been convicted of a crime sort of thing?
You know?
I mean, then it becomes that punishment could last 20, 30 years when the actual sentence for it is, you know, a fine or a couple of days in jail.
But that's the thing, Steve. I mean, wouldn't you honor... If somebody on their... apartment application or job application said, yeah, I was arrested for marijuana possession. Wouldn't you honor their honesty? He said, never having had to hire anybody in his life.
Well, if you're filling out a job application, you know, a lot of it is done online now, and a lot of their, you know, they do it electronically, weed people out by the answers to
particular
questions.
You think so? Right. It automatically just deletes your application. We don't need to go there.
If I've got 50 who haven't been busted for
pot. But who are you kidding, Mr. and Mrs. Employer, if you think all of those people who are saying, nope, never had a reefer,
nope,
or
that's
got
not,
caught.
Never got charged and convicted for it. Right.
Sure, but I mean... Well, if they're just checking no to get past the first step, that's all. I don't know. Ray wanted to say something. You're on WGN. Hey, Ray, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, thanks a lot. You know, the problem with expunging the record is they broke the law when it was the law. And if you wanted to let them out of prison or jail, that's one thing. But they still broke the law. It shows that they decided not to follow the rules at the time. And rules do change all the time. The question is, are you going to go back then if the alcohol level drops from 0.8 to 0.6, go back and charge all those people who blew a 0.7 with a crime as well? And it shouldn't go retrospective.
Right. So don't. So going forward, say we're not going to bother you nice people anymore, but you'd say if you broke the... That's an interesting point.
Well,
it's not about marijuana. It's about your adherence to the rule of law.
Well, but the example doesn't work because you can't go back and charge someone with a new law that makes it more strict.
Right. Okay. You know? But I understand his other point that what At you know the time, about the weed thing isn't the weed. It's that they didn't care.
Okay. I mean,
it's better if everybody were just perfect.
Does anybody care anymore? Like, if someone told you they smoke marijuana, would you think differently of them compared to 5 or 10 years ago?
I was at this social event last night, and we were talking about
passing
this,
the bong around.
We were at this social event last night, but on the show yesterday, I was talking. It's Drug Awareness Month or something, and one of my guests was on, and I said, you know, I haven't smoked pot in many years, but I have in my life, and it's going to be legal and stuff. That was the first thing that came up when I met these people. I said, oh, so you smoke pot? Like, not 30 years ago, maybe I did, but yeah.
Would you do it again if it were legal?
I'm not interested in it. I mean, it's certainly available. I know people who do, but I was just in California where you could have, and it just doesn't hold a lot of interest for me.
Line one is Elif says take line one. Ralph, you're on WGN. Hi, Ralph, you're on the air.
Hey, King. I applied for a position at a security company, and I was qualified for everything until I took a P test, and they found marijuana. Told me I wasn't qualified for the job anymore.
Yeah, it was an accurate test. You'd smoked marijuana, right?
Correct.
What was the time from when you smoked it last to when you had to take the urine test?
4 months.
Really? You hadn't smoked for 4 months and there was still traces of it in your urine?
Yep. It's in your body. It's in your body tissue. And as you lose weight, of course, it's more intense.
So what do you think about this?
Well, I've qualified for the job, but I understand their reasoning, but I got another job.
Yeah. It was for like a security guard?
No, it was putting in security systems.
Okay. Because this will be one of the complications with the law because, you know, they can test you for alcohol and see whether you're using alcohol at the moment. But the testing for marijuana doesn't work that way. So, you know, it's reasonable that someone who hires you, you know, wants to make sure that you are drug-free while you're in the workplace. It's going to be difficult to find a way to prove that or disprove that.
Well, it's weird that they would do that to this guy. He wasn't drunk on the job, but 4 months ago he smoked right. some marijuana.
Right. So should that keep him from getting a job?
In my world, no. But again, but here's the thing. Suppose that the security system doesn't work and they say the guy flunked a drug test, then it looks bad on the employer, so he's between a rock and a hard place. But I don't know what the fix on this is. Do you have any suggestions for us on this, Ralph?
Not at all. It's kind of, you know, unless they stop going for that and they just look for illicit drugs, not as marijuana, but going for more things like people who do coke. There are people who do coke, but 3 days later it doesn't show up in their system anymore.
Yeah. I appreciate the phone call. Thank you, Ralph. You know, the thing that I don't understand is how often I smell marijuana in the city these days. Maybe it's been there all along. It seems to me like I smell it more.
Oh, it's so much more casual. I mean, the other day I was walking up a flight of stairs, and two guys just smoking a joint.
I know, and that's one thing. But here's the thing. Like, if you could turn to me and say, well, you're going to have a cocktail or you drink beer or wine, so what I'm doing is the same as what you're doing. Yeah, but I'm not sitting on a park bench downtown drinking from a can of beer. You know, if it were equivalent, hey, marijuana is our new alcohol, fine. I drink alcohol. You want to have marijuana, that's fine. But don't have it at work. Don't have it walking down the street. Don't have it sitting on a bench. You know what I mean? I don't know where the appropriate or inappropriate lines are for its use if we do legalize it recreationally. For instance, it's legal if you're over 21 to drink beer. But can you walk down Michigan Avenue drinking from a can of beer? I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head.
Well, then the traffic person has to put in the input here. What are the legal limits of driving under the influence? And how do we test for that? Because that, you know, people, when they realize that things are okay to do, that they're legal to do, more people probably will do it, you know, and it'll be that social thing. But then, you know, you're putting a whole nother layer on the roads and putting more people in danger.
You know, the Mincing Rascals have talked about this before, Jen, and that's Scott Stanis's point. He says, okay, so what's the THC equivalent of 0.08? What's allowed and what's not allowed? You can't drink and drive, period. And if you're over 0.08, we all understand the alcohol rules. I don't know what they will be for marijuana.
Yeah, or like the half-life, you know, when do you start coming down off of it?
Well, look at this guy. So was he an illegal driver, say? Hey, you tested your urine showed you have marijuana in you 4 months ago. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that wouldn't, you know, because he wouldn't be high still. It's just in his tissues. But it also would affect brain chemistry long term, so you can't argue that, you know, differences in behaviors and thoughts, actions.
If you're just joining us, Kim Fox, the state's attorney, said that she wants to expunge all of the marijuana arrest records. Boy, I'm off the reservation here a little bit. I'm just paraphrasing what Steve Bertrand was saying. But she wants to expunge, was her word, marijuana arrest records in Cook County.
Now, this is just for possession, correct? Or like use, not...
Misdemeanor. And I don't think they've written the policy yet, or they haven't shared that, but she said they're going to move toward the expungement.
Jen seems to be very interested in the particulars on this for some reason.
Well, just because of, you know, if you're under the influence and you get into a vehicle accident and somebody else's life is affected, you know, that obviously should have consequences.
I guess, well, sure. But I mean, possession and use to me are the same thing. You have to have some of it to use it. So if I catch you smoking marijuana, that's breaking the law.
Well, I think this through, though. You just were complaining about people doing it on a public street. If you're walking down a street with it in your pocket and not using it,
that should not be against the law.
Yeah, that's like walking with a shopping bag filled with a six-pack of beer.
The state's attorney's address is up at WGNradio.com if you want to listen
yourself.
Ryan's was covering it, and he said they're doing the same, moving toward the same expungement in California, the statewide, and also in the city of Denver.
This is line 5, says Elif, and looks like I just hung up on him. So we go to 4 next. Call back line 5 if you like. I'm sorry about that. Line 4 is taxi driver Bob. You're on WGN. Hi.
Hey, John. I don't know if you heard about it, but the Super Bowl commercials that are coming up, medicinal marijuana company wanted to advertise and do a 30-second spot for $5 million. And the network, I guess, put a kibosh on it because... I don't know. I think it was because it was marijuana related, and I don't get that. If it's, especially if it's medicinal marijuana, and they're advertising, you know, beer and hard liquor, and you know, how many people are getting tanked up on a Super Bowl Sunday?
Yeah.
Driving on the road, and they don't want to advertise medicinal marijuana that has so many properties of healing people and stuff. It's not even, they were not even recreational. It's medicinal.
Really? Really? Wow.
I don't even get that. And besides that, I don't know what Bertrand's trying to hide, but I know he burns a bowl every day on the way to work. Come on now. Admit it, Steve.
Well, that's not true.
Thank you for the phone call.
Have a good one, buddy.
Have a good day.
Well, you know, I mean, we were talking again yesterday in the business lunch. Jim Beam is advertising legally on the Super Bowl. But right, this medical marijuana.
That's an interesting point.
Well, you know, part of it is, I didn't read all of CBS's arguments, but, you know, marijuana, even in medical form, is still technically a federal crime.
Well, also, it's a controlled substance like oxycodone or Vicodin. They don't have commercials for those any longer, at least, correct?
Not that I recall.
So I can see how that would fall into the same category.
They don't have commercials for that?
For oxycodone or...
Boy, they better not. I mean, trust me, the word's out. We've got it. We know how to get it. We can get it legally. We can get it illegally. We don't need to advertise that thing anymore, he said. Okay, thank you, Steve Bertrand. We were talking about what you just did in your newscast. The first story was about Kim Fox saying, for minor amounts, we'll expunge your record of marijuana possession in Cook County. How about them apples? Margaret wanted to say something about that. You're on WGN. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Margaret. Well, hi there. Hi, John. I believe it was Jen who made a comment that about the concerns that people have. And when people are using marijuana, I would think that a person would be concerned about somebody who does that, whether it's periodically or on a regular basis, that there's some reason that they're doing this, that they feel the need to do this. And if you had somebody who was drinking on a fairly regular basis, every day I need to have a couple of drinks to function, you kind of start to wonder, well, what are the problems of that person that they feel a need to rely on something as a crutch to get through the day?
Well, I got news for you. I know a lot of people who have a drink every day, and they're fine employees.
Well, you kind of wonder what is the problem that they feel the need to do that.
Have you never worked with John?
No, I mean, I'm sorry. I think we can all sit here and pass judgment, and we do this legally and otherwise to you if you use marijuana. But we can pass judgment all we want on somebody else's use of alcohol or pot. But at the end of the day, I think the only place we get to judge them, outside of the law anyway, is it affecting their productivity at work? Are they good citizens? And if they are, whatever the heck else is going on in their personal life is none of our beeswax.
Or if they're mean people. Like sometimes... Not sometimes. I know both types of people who use marijuana. I know some that are, you know, happy-go-lucky and laid back. But I do know a handful that are constantly mean. And so
when they're high, you mean?
Well, yeah, because they're constantly high. But, you know, it's just like, is your life that miserable that you have to be like this? And what are you like if you're not on it? So I understand what she's saying and where she's coming from because, you know, it can affect relationships. It can definitely affect relationships.
I guess so, but I think I'm thinking about something else entirely. I appreciate the phone call. I mean, to my point, look, I think what basically we're talking about is we know you can drink alcohol mm-hmm. and you can go about your life. Should we treat marijuana the same way? That's the whole recreational thing. But Kim Fox is simply saying, let's not punish people beyond the punishment that they've already received. Mm-hmm. I think this was the point Steve was making earlier. If that's on your record, whatever it is that you paid the price for, you're going to pay the price on that forever.
Right. This is what we call the permanent record. John, the other thing she said is the convictions now, they will move toward diversion programs and not a traditional conviction. So it's two-pronged there, expunging the record and not really pursuing prosecutions for some of these misdemeanors, putting them in, you know, a diversion program instead to avoid a prosecution, to avoid that on your record.
Steve, this texter from 847 says, I own both commercial and residential properties. I will not rent to someone with a cannabis arrest.
Well, there you go. Hmm.
On top of the arrests, tenants who don't smoke hate smelling it in the hallways. Well, don't be stupid.
That's true.
Don't be stupid about it. That's the thing. I'm like, you guys, don't be smoking on the bus. Don't be smoking your reefer walking down the street.
But again, so
don't be smoking your reefer in your apartment building because you're not supposed to smoke in an apartment building.
But yeah, those are two different questions. He or she is saying, I'll put words in her mouth. I will not, you know, rent to someone who's been busted for marijuana.
They said that.
Whether it was 20 years ago or a year ago, right? It's not someone who's smoking marijuana in my units. It's someone who's ever done it. And so if you have that on your record from 20 years ago, you're hurt by that.
I guess you get to lie then, right? If they expunge it from your record and then on your employment, your military, or your residential application, they ask if you use marijuana, you need to say, it's funny you should ask that.
Well, that's a different question. You know, do you use marijuana is different than have you ever been convicted of a crime? It's more likely saying, have you ever been convicted of a crime? Yes, marijuana possession.
Okay, but a lot of people don't want to say that.
No.
And even if the county said we've expunged it, I think a lot of, I wonder if that would make a difference to this landlord. Probably not. expunged schmick sponge.
Well, they would never know.
If they found out about it, it wouldn't, yeah. But that's the point. But that's exactly the point.
Well, so Kim Fox is saying, and you all go ahead and lie about it because we know that people are still going to be prejudiced against
you. No, you're confusing smoking now to having ever been busted for smoking.
When you were in college and you got a ticket for it, but you're 45 years old right now and that's still on your record.
And that person's getting turned down by this lawyer or this landlord, even though he or she might not have smoked in 20 years.
Yeah.
So. See what we're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's taken up a lot of our court and jail time. And so, you know, the misdemeanors.
847 says, do you realize the money we spend on the jail system on these nonviolent pot offenses?
Mm-hmm.
And then the loss that they suffer economically after that because of the convictions.
Can you get into the military? This texter says, I don't think you can. Can you, if on your military application you say, I smoke marijuana, I did smoke marijuana, I was arrested for marijuana, will the Army have you?
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, it's a shame that you and I have that as a chorus. Lindsay, you're on WGN Radio. Hi, Lindsay. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind? Go ahead.
So I know you're talking about the expungement when it comes to, like, applications, too. So I used to work for a law firm about 5 years just recently. And now what employers are doing, because they're getting smart, a lot of the questions are saying, have you been arrested? Next question, have you had something expunged and
Really?
Well, because now, obviously, with expunging, yes, it comes off your record, but we cannot control Google. So, in most, obviously, with like news and stuff like that, they don't take stuff down. So, they'll ask you on your application, have you ever been expunged or have you ever been arrested? You say no, they Google you. And there you are. So they kind of catch you up. But a lot of the applications now, majority of them say, like, have you had something expunged and or sealed?
I wouldn't be surprised then if there's a movement to make that question illegal on applications because, you know, they have moved. I don't know where they are exactly. I know Danny Davis has worked on this and others to stop asking whether you've been convicted for a crime altogether, because a lot of times, you know, that again haunts you for the rest of your life. It hurts African Americans more than others, and you know, you never are able to recover from that. Families suffer from that. So I think if they, I wonder if they would, there'd be a lot of outlaw that question.
What do you think about that one? The name of our caller, are you still there?
I think I think it depends on the charge, like what Kimberly Fox is saying, you know, smaller cannabis, I think that's perfectly fine. I think when it comes to even cases, if you say, like, assault against a police officer or even domestics, you know, obviously the girlfriend or boyfriend may not show up, it's dropped. You can actually get those expunged, which I think shouldn't be done because it's more of a safety thing. As like, you know, you could get it expunged and it looks like it never happened because, you know, the spouse is too afraid to say something. Well, now it's erased and, like, it never happened.
You know, you could argue the other side, saying the spouse didn't show up because it wasn't true. So then if you weren't convicted, why should you forever be punished, too? I mean, expungement has to mean expungement, I think.
Yeah, I think maybe that can maybe fall under being sealed because, obviously, the, you know, public, like, wouldn't be able to see it. But, like, government or, like,
Google will find it.
Would be able to.
That's funny, though, but a lot of things.
I mean, I was at a law firm for, almost 5 years, so majority of them, they do happen. Like, we've had clients say, yes, it did happen. But, you know, the spouse is like, oh, well, they didn't mean to, or it was just a fluke, or it hasn't happened in a while. So then they, you know, kind of feel that guilt and then don't go to court. Or, you know, they don't want to make it worse or get dragged into, okay, you know, the trial process, the interviews, the state's attorney. Very overwhelming, especially to, like, a victim. So majority of our clients who didn't commit them get things dropped, and I think it could be expunged, but not, or maybe sealed, because it's a safety thing. Because maybe this happens again.
No, I get your point. I get your point. Well, I got to run here, Lindsay. I appreciate your call. This has been very helpful. Thanks for jumping in the conversation. You will be on the committee when I get to be king of deciding which records will still, you know, be on your permanent record and which will not. Which will employers or landlords have the right to exclude you, and which will they not?
That doesn't fall under the current King John title.
I guess I could do it, but I've been real busy, and I don't want to I don't want to. What a hassle that is. But you know what? Marijuana possession, you're smoking marijuana at a party or with your friends or wherever the heck you're doing it. Just don't be doing it on my L. Don't be doing it on the red line.
Yeah.
You know those crazy black Hebrew Israelites that stoked all of that unrest in the Capitol last weekend? Have you listened to what those guys were saying?
I heard some of it.
Oh, my gosh. It's just really vile, crazy, profane, ignorant, mean stuff.
I'm surprised that the boys fought back. I would have cried and ran away.
Well, there were five of the black guys and about, you know, 100 of these teenagers. So one of the questions that they were asked on the Today Show is, did you like your chances? And I'm like, yeah, I kind of, maybe those guys were intimidating. The whole thing was escalating. But the kids probably felt some strength in numbers. Here's the point, though. So I got on the red line today. And, you know, all you want to do is just, if you're lucky, get a seat and then just look at your phone. That's mm-hmm. how you ride the L. And standing at the end of the car was one of these crazy ass guys who is just going on for the whole. He's berating everybody in my train car. And he is, I want to believe, just mentally imbalanced. But he's angry. He's spewing religious and sexual and cussing words and phrases, and he's judging us, and he's talking about his sex life and our sex lives and violence, and he's just going on, and he's outraged, and he's loud, and he's bellowing this. And you don't know that until you get on the car, and the door closes, and you go, oh, crap, this is my car. So then you just wait for the next stop, and at the next stop, a lot of people got up and left.
Uh-huh.
I was going to join them, but I was looking around, and I'm looking at who's on the car, and I can tell that most of the people are going to stay, and a lot of them are women, and a lot of them are younger women, say 25-year-olds,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not sure how this thing's going to play out, and I actually felt a little bit of an obligation to stay there because I thought, I don't want to bail on these ladies, because who knows what this guy is going to do. So you just kind of sit there and endure this verbal beating that we all took from Addison to State and Grand, you know, 15 minutes of him just going on and on and on.
You know, when we report the CTA stopped moving because of a sick passenger on a train,
yeah,
that's kind of what they mean.
I was thinking, that's really interesting. I didn't know that. I've often wondered that because they do stop it for a while. But I'm thinking it'd be nice if there was some recourse, like all of us that are kind of trapped in this thing. And for all we knew, it was going to get violent. Mm-hmm. What are our options here? And for some of us, we're just going to get off. Maybe we're lucky and our stop comes up. Other people needed to be on that train. Now, you can get off that car and hurry up and run around and get on another car and hope that guy doesn't walk through the vestibule and join you, because they do that sometimes. But I thought there should be a button to push on every car of every L. And I don't know that there is, but that thing felt like it could go at any point. 224, it's almost impossible not to smell someone smoking marijuana in an apartment. It's almost impossible to not smell.
But keep in mind that marijuana has advanced in so many crazy ways where you can consume it without smoking it.
That's what the next text says. Great. Yeah.
Gummy bears.
Bears, oils, skin ointments that you can rub on.
Like, nobody really? In Colorado yeah. actually smokes it, right? They just no, all I
think
do edibles?
They do it all, I think. They eat gummy bears after smoking.
I guarantee you, if I take up the habit, I'm not going to do it as an ointment. I'm not going to start rubbing
oh,
it
no,
on
Oh, no, people
my...
do it for migraines. They rub it on the forehead.
Well,
their
that
forehead.
Would be medicinal. I get that.
Yeah.
I get that.
I'm an ultramarathon runner, which means that I do distances like over 31 miles.
Sweet humble brag, Jen.
Yeah. Woohoo. But no, there's a lot of people in the Western states that do these insane distances and don't take things like ibuprofen or Tylenol. They do the edibles because it's just more herbal and healthy. So there's a huge debate going on in ultra running. Is this doping or, you know, is this worth it? Because, yeah. you know, it's fine in those states for medical uses.
224 says, ban the box, John. Check that for applications. Check out ban the box for applications. In other words, they want applications to not have some of these boxes that are self-incriminating. Somebody else said, oh, great, now we're going to raise a generation of pot users and liars, right? Because Kim Fox says, we're going to expunge your record, and what are you going to do about it? If it's not on the record and they ask, you might be inclined to lie.
Jeez, whole country's going to hell.
Next thing you know, the president won't be given a State of the Union address. Cats and dogs sleeping together. The attorneys at, oh, this is good. The attorneys at GWC, boy, they're going to have a bonanza for them down the road on some of this. They pride themselves on being a preeminent injury law firm from Chicago. Their offices are in Chicago. They have an office here. Their roots and families are in Chicago. Despite what you see and hear for lots of lawyer advertising, that's not true in a lot of instances. Many of the law firms that you see advertising in Chicagoland aren't even from the state. Unless you ask the question to get an honest answer, you'll never know the truth. Many of these lawyers that you see on TV don't even try cases. They want you to know they're ferocious in the courtroom, but many of them just want to settle. If you are looking for a Chicago trial lawyer to aggressively represent you in your personal injury case, call the trial lawyer firm with 100 employees right here in Chicago, GWC. They're ready to get you the money you deserve, whether by settlement or trial. GWC. What's the number, John? 312-999-9999. 312, then dial 9. Or visit justicestartstoday.com. Into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, the stories that matter, plus a preview of what's coming up with Roe and Anna next on GM. So we exit stage D and head over to Studio A now, where Roe Khan, Anna DeVlantis, and company are. Hi, guys.
Hello, John.
Hi, John.
What's going on?
Kevin and I went out and did a one-hitter out in front of the building.
Let's order a pizza.
Is
that allowed?
Can we just get past that, the whole reefer joke thing?
No, that's half my comedy bit. I have very limited material, John, and that's part of it.
Wasn't that radio during the 70s and 80s anyway?
Yeah, right.
No, that was cocaine radio. No, that's exactly what that was. That was a totally different drug.
That's true. You know, they're in Peoria. A guy was getting drugs in the mail, playing records on the radio.
Yeah.
Right. Really?
Right. That was the whole Plugola Payola scandal.